Welcome to the third episode of the Becomings podcast. My name is Emma Grillo-Kajeva, and today we are in the studio with postdoctoral researcher Ali Ali, who will tell us more about his research. Ali is a researcher in the Becomings research project. In today's podcast, we focus on themes of queer exile, community building, and the politics of love. So let's dive into today's episode. Ali, could you tell us about your research interests in general terms?
Yeah, my general interest in this project is about the political pedagogics of the mundane. In other words, it's about how the emotional, the affective, or the affective effect, that urgency and emergency for change and difference, or at least how it points out towards that. I mean, by difference, like different structures of politics and society. So how our relations and encounters are sites and instances of seeing social structures and politics in a different light, and why not?
Okay, well, before we go a bit deeper into your research, could you tell us about the importance of it in the present moment, maybe also beyond it?
Yeah, so I see that research has mostly, or previous research, has mostly focused on the value, necessity, and sometimes inevitability of relations of sustenance and solidarity, i.e. how solidarity and relations of survival work to alleviate, redress, or challenge repressive border regimes. But how these relations take shape and traction, or at least how they become more common in the first place, or how they take form and happen, it's very little researched, as I see. So my other question is how, when the formal institutional institutions lag and fail and become monotonous realms of injurious norms over time and space, think about academia, for example, how it is becoming more of a manufacturing careers, more or less. So when that happens, I wonder if that, if tapping into something less institutional, more free to leeway of our experiences, more true to how we experience injuries and violence. And I wonder what the intimate, the mundane, and the daily lives, the encounters, the relations there have to teach us about what other directions we could look into, and what imaginations and change is possible in this. And so, and in matters of temporalities, I see that our political consciousness does not often figure as historical and situated. So what I mean here by that, and I see that a problem, of course, because we don't see the how we got to this present moment of suffering, of insecurity, of not knowing what to do, and we don't usually locate it in how histories of patriarchy and colonialism have got us there. And that's what I see most important in figuring out in the intimate and the mundane, is how histories figure there. So more or less, relations of community and support are often assumed to emerge from shared concerns, but we know this is not the case, because shared concerns or shared interest does not always figure as solidarity. They maybe they would figure as competition, right? So how about the struggle and the contradictions in those struggles, and mainly how about the trajectories of change that happen in the field of the somatic, i.e. the embodied, the visceral, the nervous, the aesthetic, and the emotional, how all of these affect our consciousness? How do they draw attention? How they draw attention to different forms of attention, or at different forms of collaboration, different forms of affinity, different forms of caring for things and others, and even our own troubles, and how we locate them in histories. So in other words, how we sense histories of injustice as flashes, impulses, and small epiphanies in our embodied lives and mundane encounters before we start to see them more lucidly inside the histories and structures of injustice.
Okay, so as you mentioned, you look at the mundane intimacy in your research. So can you tell us a bit more about what you mean by the mundane, and how you approach it as a side of political knowledge making.
Yeah, so maybe I wouldn't like to couple the word mundane always with intimate, but I would see them as a continuum of forms of relation, because collegial relations are also mundane. Friendship relations could be between the intimate and the mundane. But also I look into erotic love proper, for example, in some of my work, but I'm not going to go into that detail. I want to define the mundane in negative terms. So it is not exclusionary to more official and institutional and to state politics and policies. It is exactly how political abstractions and political and historical structures figure sharply and lucidly in our bodies and in our minds in daily urban, collegial and intimate relations and communications. So I see that politics and histories of racial injustice and patriarchies are not recognized or encountered in political speeches and public activism. Maybe at least not initially, right? I mean, you don't hear a political speech and you immediately change your mind or change your feelings about it, right? They are rather, these injustices, these forms of injustice, they are rather encountered and experienced in our daily life, in our relations, in more intimate and more vernacular, i.e. more everyday and embodied relations. So I'm here is a question to think through. How much of our mundane has been shaped and has been shaped to facilitate and lubricate white supremacy and misogynist patriarchy? Think of, for example, the creation of women as categories. Think of categories in general and how temporal categories of progress, work and reproduction have facilitated the exploitative structures. We don't think about them, we just engage into them and we normalize them. So what is considered productive and what is normalized as the work of nature of some populations like women and the racialized? Let's think about through that, or at least that's what I think through in order to try to dismantle or tackle. So to claim the naturalness of women's reproductive work is to make it mundane, a mundane thing. We need to tap into that mundanity and show how much politics, especially injurious politics, have been lodged in what we take for granted, what we normalize and call mundane, something, or at least we do call our, if I call it mundane, it's not to undermine it or underestimate it, but also to oppose those currents that want to trivialize the mundane. And this is where queer and feminist scholarship is most effective here, and how that activism of queer and feminism is about honoring and reevaluating and re-narrating that mundane. And by honoring, I don't mean pride. I mean recognizing the genuine value and necessity to look into something that is trivialized by norms, especially patriarchic norms. So it's about honoring the particular, the particular, the situational as an antidote to norms. Maybe this is a big word, but I see that experiencing things as they are, for example, experiencing how structures of patriarchy figure in our bodies and lives as injurious aspects is a starting point to how we start, how we realize the necessity for change and action, and also affinity and solidarity to tackle that. So it not only calls out on the urgency calls out the injurious norms. It also it shows the emergency of different structures of meaning, community and forms of temporalities, i.e. how we imagine progress and what is progress, and how we could make these claims of progress less violent.
Yeah, so, well, you actually kind of now tapped into this idea of the mundane as a site of change, as a place where also antidotes to norms take place. And in our research project, activism, social movements are at the center of our scholarly attention. Do you still want to expand on how you see the mundane as a site of change?
Yeah, maybe just risking repeating myself again, but maybe more elaboration, or to put it in different words, I see the body and the embodied as the nexus between the political and the particular. By particular, I mean the situated, the lived, the embodied, the thing that we experience in real time and in real embodiment. So I see bordering as a psychosomatic experience. You don't experience bordering by hearing news only. You experience bordering when you encounter it in daily lives. You encounter it whether at university, whether at state borders, whether at nightclubs, or anywhere where there is policing and bordering. So, and here I see narrative recognition as an important term that I have used in my previous in previous texts. And I see that narrative recognition as a very crucial point in forming new solidarities and affinities, because by recognizing the suffering and the injuries that we go through, we start to be more aware of the structures of injury. We start to see how structures figure in our bodies and experiences in ways that require reconsidering the structures. And I see that narrative recognition as a psychosomatic thing. It's not an abstract thing, as I said. And also the site of forming solidarities and political affinities that take traction and resonance, i.e. that become more popular or becomes more normalized, that become more mainstream. And here I mean mainstream in a nice way. So it's about shifts in consciousness that affect more just and solidary sensibility to matters of race, gender, and class, and also especially across these borders of race and gender and class.
Okay, let's get towards closing this episode. There's one more thing that I want to discuss with you. Well, becomings is one of the central concepts driving our work, as you know, also from the title of this podcast series, Becomings, that each one of us researchers in this project in some way engages with. How do you address the idea of becomings in your work? Maybe you could also tell us a little bit about how you understand becomings.
Yeah.
And how it connects to transformation.
I see becoming in matters of solidarity and collective struggle as the recognition of shared concerns among fellows and across divisions and differences, as I just mentioned before, divisions of race, ethnicity, of class. So that is partly to put on its head the manufactured division and antagonisms between individual concerns, i.e. I think that's our work of anti-capitalism, of our anti-capitalistic modes of thinking, of that individualizing struggle and telling people that their individual struggle is their own fault or their own responsibility. So that means de-individualizing personal struggles and also realizing the shared struggle across different collective movements. So that is also recognizing how structures of race and gender are so much entangled. Additionally, and simultaneously, this becoming also requires tapping into our aesthetics, how they are mystified and naturalized aspect, or how mystified or naturalized aspect of power have become weaved into our daily lives and encounters, and critically, to put it in more simple terms, think of, for example, of how our modes of imagining, romanticizing, seeking, and enacting love, whether erotic, divine, or both at once sometimes, can either sustain or break with the endorsing of abusive norms of patriarchy and coloniality.
Okay, thank you, Ali, for sharing your insightful thoughts on your research. And to our audiences, we hope you enjoyed today's episode. Stay tuned for the next one.